You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
In the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Ed Alexander, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Christy Simone. I see you've got a house full over there.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a great day today.
We're not doing 6 feet apart. We're doing 23 feet apart in the palatial studios here at Bustos Media.
Christy Simone is still on a high from yesterday's MAGA.
I'm high on life, Ed Alexander.
I know you are.
Remember, our happy hour is a week from today. It's going to be at the Arizona Sands Club.
Yes.
We got Joe Ersig and Courtney coming up from the Arizona Sands Club in the next hour. We have the U.S., the drug czar of the entire United States of America, James Carroll, at 7:45. And then our buddy Gene Fedigan from Sister Jose Women's Shelter coming up at 8:30, one of our favorite nonprofits to support here in Tucson. My good friend Joe Higgins is here.
Good morning, sunshine.
We went to the Trump rally yesterday.
We did. It was an awesome time. Great experience. Proud to be an American, Chris. Imagine that.
You know, that Lee Greenwood song does drive me crazy, but it did. It's been overplayed, but
it
did nail it yesterday.
Yes,
so.
It did.
And then we'll tell you a story about the city of Tucson's weeds and the Tucson Airport Authority parking lot that is so perfect that Joe's here today. It's amazing. Every month they have
solar things.
The solar, that really did help. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah. COVID.
God bless you.
COVID.
Every month we try to do a Get to Know Your TPD segment, and we have Sergeant Jack Gilsing. Did I get that right?
You did. Thank you.
And he's with the TPD Homeless Outreach.
Thanks for having me.
How long have you been on the force, Sergeant?
Since July of 2012, so, man, it's been a while, 8.5 years.
And what did you do leading up to that?
Prior to that, I was, I sold some cars for about a year after I got out of college, and before that, I just was a college football player at Arizona.
Really?
Yeah.
What position did you play?
Offensive tackle.
Very nice.
We rule the world. We're the smart ones, Chris. We're the smart ones, and we do all the work.
All
we're the reason the game wins or
all
loses.
All the gritty, thankless work.
It's one on the line, man.
Who did you play for?
Mike Stoops.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
That'll help your dealing with people issues here.
Yeah.
Dealing with crazy homeless people. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Different kind of homeless people.
Yeah. Mike, he was interesting, that's for sure. He had some nervous tics, that's for sure.
One time, our mutual friend Tanner Bell talked about the first meeting Mike had with all the crew after he got hired. And it was like, he's never heard so many profanities in the first meeting he's ever had with a coach.
Yeah, once he goes down that rabbit hole of something upsetting him, it's unstoppable. And you just sit in your seat and you're like, all right, we'll have film session one of these days.
Why a cop? Why did you make this step in your life?
You know, I had originally gone to college and I was going to get an accounting degree because I was actually really good at math. And I talked to my dad, he's an immigrant from Europe, so he was an engineer because he's very good at math. And he kind of told me, well, I had to, you know, he said, Jack, I had to do that because that was the way to make money for me. I didn't have many opportunities, but he said, you should do something that you want to do. And I said, well, I really want to be a police officer, to tell you the truth. And he's like, well, go do that. Go get your college degree and you can be a police officer. And
I like your dad already.
Yeah. And, it, you know, just being an offensive lineman. And if you've seen The Blind Side, you know, they talk about, you know, being a protector and all that. And you're not going to get thanked for it as an offensive lineman. The only time you're going to get noticed when you get a holding penalty, you give up a sack. But, you know.
Jack, you're among friends here, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
Wins the game, man. We
exactly.
Own this field.
And I think people deep down, they know
that. Yes, they do.
You're not going to get the endorsement as an offensive lineman. But I think everybody who knows football says, yeah, the O-lines, those are the guys protecting everybody.
How fast did you run the 40 when you're in your prime?
I tried to break 5, but I didn't quite get there. I think I was between 5.0 and 5.1.
Yeah, what'd you run at? What was your weight when you were playing?
It fluctuated. I think I got to U of A at like 290, and then I got up to like 335 or something. You know,
5.0 40 at 300 pounds, man. Come on.
That's
talent.
After 40, though, it's over.
Yeah. Joe's famous for his 6.4.
6.4, yeah. Yep. 6.440.
That'll beat Rich Eisen at the combine, I'm sure.
And, of course, Joe, he went to the U of A for 7 years.
Yes.
All right.
So did not get his master's.
Not a doctor.
It's like from Tommy Boy.
Exactly. Had a lot of fun. I was bartending at the time. Right.
Hey, that's all right.
So talk about where did you start in TPD, and then talk about transitioning into homeless outreach.
Yeah, so everybody who joins TPD, obviously you have to do a few years in patrol, and that's just your regular street cop. That's the meat and potatoes of police work. Those guys are the life force.
The offensive linemen of
TPD. Yeah, really, they are. I mean, they're the ones responding to all the danger and the unknown, the 911 calls, traffic stops, whatever you call 911 for, they're going to. And so I started off in Midtown.
Jack, I did a ride along in the South Side, and I was shocked that you would go from dog in a or cat in a tree to a full on like shooting.
Oh my God! Like you'd have a quiet night, and then all of a sudden you've got like a triple homicide or some drive by or an officer's in a shooting. So,
it just goes fast though. I mean,
it's very stressful too. So I transitioned from patrol officer to. I worked in the Counter Narcotics Alliance as a detective for a couple of years, which was fun, seeing the undercovers do their thing and going to court a lot and kind of managing cases and whatnot. So I got a little bit of the non-police side of things. And then promoted to sergeant, and when you promote to sergeant, you got to start off in patrol. And that was very stressful because you really start to care about your guys.
Mm-hmm.
You really take a lot of ownership in your squad and the officers out there doing stuff. So you talk about it goes from nothing to something quick.
You're kind of in charge of them all, right?
You're monitoring every call and you're making the decisions. You're holding the bag. And especially I work nights for the most part, and there's no, there's nobody above you that's on at night. So when you're the sergeant, and you're working at night, you're the highest ranking member of the Tucson Police Department. So it's in your hands and those guys that, especially those night sergeants, there's a few of them that are just absolutely incredible that I got to train with, and they helped me a lot. And then I had a really, really good group of officers. And, so doing that job, I'd look at the calls and I'd say, wow, man, we have, if anybody doesn't know, our police department's understaffed per what our population is. We're, I think, 75% staffing.
Oh, we know, Jack. Yeah. We know closely. We've been following this for so long, and it's a shame.
And I looked at the amount of calls, and I said, man, there are a lot of calls related to homelessness on here. And I had brought up probably about a year ago, maybe a little, like 11 months ago, I was part of the, we call it the ELT, supervisory ELT. So they have an executive leadership team, TPD does, with the chiefs and some citizens. And they basically are the decision makers. They look at how to redo some policies and go in different routes if we need to change what we're doing. And they also meet once a month with a select group of sergeants. And I was part of that select group of sergeants. And I was in that meeting and I said, listen, there's 43 calls holding just in our division right now. And we have like 12 cops on. And we're going to be behind on calls for a long time. There's 30 of these calls are related to homelessness. And I kind of just pitched and I just said, hey, we need some sort of homeless unit, and I was hoping to get one for each division, but obviously staffing, it's going to be tough to do that. But I said, there's a lot of homeless calls that you're sending police to that they don't know what, the patrol officers aren't going to be able to, find a resource for them or really take an in-depth dive into getting them housing or medical treatment or mental health treatment or drug treatment. It's we do our best, and we do have resources available, but it's very hard to really find the time to do that. As
right,
we got to get to the danger calls, and it's usually a low priority call when it's a homeless person in an alley or a wash or hanging behind a Circle K. So,
hey Jack, just a question on the homelessness in general. You've got economic displacement, you've got drug abuse and drug use and in that world, and then you got mental illness. How would you break them down, or what would that look like in a population that you see?
So I think it's been termed like the unholy trinity of mental illness, substance use, and homelessness. It's very hard to track those types of numbers because a lot of them, co-mingle with each other.
Sure.
I would say it's most of the homeless population here has substance use issues and mental illness. because it's not like California or San Francisco or Seattle right. where it's like $7,000 to rent a one-bedroom right. apartment. You don't have a lot of people here that are homeless because they can't afford the cost of living. There are some, but right. it's not a lot like you do in California where you got people sleeping in their Mercedes in right. a safe parking lot. So,
yep. Shantytown.
All right, hold on for 2 seconds. We've got to go to break. Oh, we're going to do one more.
You and these breaks.
Right. Hey, someone's got to keep the
show. I get a little long-winded, sorry.
We're having a good conversation,
great.
Man.
You're coming back before this whole show's over again one day. So we got right. Sergeant Jack Jolsing on the line. He's with the Homeless Outreach Unit at TPD. Joe Higgins is here, Ed Alexander. 10:30 The Voice, local news and 7:23, Christy Simone. It's the offensive lineman hour with Joe Higgins and Sergeant Jake Jolsing.
He's the blind side.
Jack, what was, real quick, I want to get the homelessness. What's the greatest game you ever played as an offensive lineman?
Man, it's tough. You really don't think about them as great. I thought they were great, and then my O-line coach graded me really bad. I liked, even though we lost the ASU game, Territorial Cup in 2010, I thought I did all right that game.
What quarterbacks did you protect?
I was Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. Yeah. Nick Foles, man, good cool. for him. I'd very appreciative of.
Did
his
he remember
success.
You? Like, did you call him after the Super Bowl?
No, you know what? Those guys are so busy, and you know, we weren't friends before college, and I was like, you know what? He's a good teammate and all that, but he moves away. You let him do his thing. He's got his family and all that, and. Same with Rob Gronkowski, played with him, which was real nice, and it's good to see them. It's good to see them flourish, you know, in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to see them succeed because they were good people.
When you play college and go to the NFL, you realize how hard that sport is level. Yeah. Those guys are just insane.
Yeah, you know? Everybody was all state in high school that you play with in college, and everybody was.
Well, all the Bears conference. Fans are thrilled that Nick is saving them from Mitch Trubisky.
Oh yeah.
We only have a few minutes, but tell me about. In what are you trying to get done? I know you want to take the calls, the homeless calls, off of the other patrol.
Yes.
But what do you want to do? What are some of the measurables for you in the homeless outreach unit?
So getting people into permanent housing is the ultimate goal. It's actually cheaper to pay for someone's permanent housing than it is for a homeless person to be on the street with the cost of 911 calls and medical transports, all the other associated costs. So police are usually the first point of contact for many contacts with the homeless. And what my unit's doing is kind of the liaison between the social workers and the patrol officers. And we are doing some things that no law enforcement agency has ever done in regards to the way we work with homeless, our unit, the training that we're receiving, the ability to assess them and know what programs they're eligible for and who to connect them with. And it's been very good because a lot of these homeless resources have not, I won't say I haven't been trusting in police, but just have never worked with police, and now they love to work with our unit. I can get people from Housing Community Development, Sullivan Jackson, La Frontera, Primavera, Old Pueblo Community Services, CBI, Kodak, Hope, all those guys, that they'll come out with me and my unit to the streets and help us when we need help on, hey, this guy wants to get some help, let's get him out of the streets. Cool. And there's a misconception that the homeless are criminals. A lot of the crime that they commit, they do commit a lot of infractions, but they're always related to them being homeless. It's not like if they had a house that they'd still commit these crimes. And it's a survival kind of crime. And I think the public forgets that because they do get a little upset with the homeless situation. The quality of life has gone down because they're seeing the homeless in the parks and all that.
So what's an example of a crime that you feel is a survival crime?
Well, just using the bathroom in public or littering or trespassing in a wash or an alley. I mean, right. Where else are they going to go? Where, you know, they don't have a bathroom. They don't have anywhere to put their garbage. They don't have anywhere to sleep. So they end up causing they sleep behind your house. You're going to be ticked off at them. Mm-hmm. And so we try to balance that. And, you know, we've got some ideas. We're trying to look into a community court model, which would instead of sanctioning or, you know, instead of punishing the homeless for these crimes with jail time and fines, it would say, hey, you can enter into community court, get a case management system going where, hey, instead of you doing community service or paying a fine, you have to enroll in this housing program or this job program or get your ID card and check in with your case manager. Give some realistic sanctions that would help their, you know, quality of life. And I think a lot of citizens deep down, they do want these people to get help.
Yeah. So. Now, could we become a magnet for homelessness if there's too much going on or if we become too good at it?
Yeah, so that's always the fear. It's like, hey, if your community's homeless friendly, you know, are you just going to keep attracting some from LA, Phoenix,
LA.
From New Mexico? You know, yeah. So, you know, I don't know. The cost of living is cheap here. You know, I work narcotics, so I know the cost of illegal drugs on the street is very cheap here. We're a source city for, you know, a lot of drugs. And so that's going to always attract a different crowd. But I don't think you can ever – I don't think there's a downside to helping out that vulnerable population because we as a society, we're going to have to deal with them. Their issues are our issues.
And we're a very poor city, so this is something that's not going away in a very long time.
Yeah, but
they're spending
more money, though. The Housing First program, if you look up kind of how the Housing First program is working with the city, they're focusing on getting people permanent housing first because if you are addicted to heroin – and you're living in a tunnel or a wash, and I'm trying to work with you on your addiction. Well, if you're living in the wash, then it's going to be easier for you to relapse versus I give you a house and now I know where I can find you. I can do proper follow up with you. You're kind of stabilized. You have a structure. Now, maybe that drug treatment and that detox will stick a little bit harder. Same with your mental illness. That'll stick a little bit harder because now you have somewhere to actually live.
And an address and a place to get a job and a phone.
And that's the idea behind that. And that's what the city and the county are moving forward with. They're doing great. I have to shout out Liz Morales with Housing Community Development. Has done a great job working with the mayor's office and city manager.
Cool.
So.
All right. We'll continue this conversation another day. Sergeant Jack Gilsing, thanks for your service.
Thank you guys for having me. We really appreciate the representation.
All right. Good luck, man. We love what you guys are doing. So
thank
keep
you, gentlemen.
Do the good work. Joe Higgins and I, Chris Diesman, we're going to talk about what happened after the rally yesterday that has to do with weeds and parking lots. It's beautiful. Wake up, Tucson.
Wake up, Tucson. That sergeant guy doesn't fit through the door.
He's a big dude.
Oh, my gosh.
He's a big guy.
So I just took a picture of him. He did the wingspan thing.
Yeah.
So he can actually touch the floor and the top of the door.
Yeah.
With both at both times with his hands.
Amazing. Tall and wide. Big guy.
He's a perfect offensive.
Super.
Now Joe Higgins, can his wingspan with his long arms?
I can't even tie my shoe, so that's how far away I go.
Velcro. There you go.
Ed, we know why you stayed in Tucson. Drugs are cheap here.
That's true.
From your Rincon days. It makes sense now.
We knew that a long time ago.
What do you call it? Lid or a finger? What do you call it?
Lid.
Yeah.
A long time ago, dude. Yeah.
Wacky.
Old desert town, man. What do you think?
We get it, Ed. We get it.
7:36 in the morning, this hour of Wake Up brought to you by our good friends at Central Arizona Block, CabcoAZ.com.
Love those guys. They've been with us for so incredibly long, Chris.
Absolutely.
Just great, solid dudes, great organization. Go over there and check them out.
They give a crap about their community.
They do, man. Just good people.
Okay. Ed with the masonry he's buying because of staying in Pliskin Acres, his walls are now 43 feet high.
Two feet deep, too.
Really. He's like Trump. I'm going to build a great, big, beautiful wall. So, Joe.
Walls and wheels.
So, Joe and I went with Bill Beard, my wife. Mayor Ed from Marana was hanging out with us.
Yes.
And we went to the Trump rally yesterday.
Chris, I got a shiver, and I got a little tear in my eye, because I'm proud to be an American. I love what we stand for. The idea of America has changed the world. Look at the poverty look at the poverty rate, the democracies around the country. It made the world better with an idea. And we're having a debate right now whether we're going to keep it or not.
Right. So
come on.
And to win power and to control the honeypot. Okay.
Sure.
The Democrat Party has really assaulted everything about being an American.
Yes, our history.
You're supposed
our
to be ashamed of it.
Right. Cops and on and on. It's like, come on, man.
They've attacked it all.
Yes.
And I think that's the idea that the deplorable dynamic that Hillary Clinton set forth 4 years ago is still at play and stronger than ever.
Right.
And it's interesting, as a sitting president, it's almost as Trump is running as an outsider again.
Yes. Yes. I'm not a politician. He got it right up there and said, he says, I could have gone off into the sunset and enjoyed my wealth, but he basically said, I'm doing this for you. They're not coming after me. They're coming after you. And think about you. Say your grandpa, say he's at your age, he's 72, or say he's 72, he's a billionaire. He's got grandkids. He knows what this country has done for him and his family.
Right.
The biggest thing you told me the other day, you had Trump Jr.
Right.
And you asked him, how does your dad connect with local people? And I told you this because I thought it was so profound.
Right.
He said, when my dad was on a construction site, he never went to the superintendent. He would go to the bricklayer.
Right.
So he had to connect with the bricklayer because that's how you find out what's going on in the world. And
right.
that's what this billionaire has been able to do, is connect with average Joes.
Yep.
And it's beautiful to watch. We had kids there from, you know, they're little ones all the way up to seasoned citizens.
Every type of American.
Yes.
The one that you and I used to kid around in the old days, it used to be the inlay on your McDonald's tray about coming to go come work at the company. You had the older guy, the younger person, the African-American, the Hispanic, the Asian, the kid in the wheelchair. We had it all. It was going down at the Trump rally.
Yes.
They had right in the middle, just to the left, off to his left, was the people with their rainbow flag for Gays for Trump.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it was
right next to me, Bruce, retired Green Beret.
Yeah.
And he said, look, he looked over to me about midway through. He goes, we'll never see this again in our lifetime. And I think he's right.
Yeah.
Trump tapped a vein in this country that we've been waiting for. And it's okay to be an American is what he told us last night.
Right.
So
because it's so perfect that Joe was scheduled before we ever thought about going to a Trump rally.
Ugh.
Okay.
I know where you're going.
We're walking out, right? And they had shuttles taking us over, but they had everyone walk back to the economy lot, which is right when you're going to make a right in the airport, kind of to get into the circle, you make a left.
It's the 451, right. The one that you stay long term.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah.
So we go over there, and we park. So we're walking over there, passing by all the cops. It was really great. Everyone saying thank you for your service and everything, right? I think a lot of the cops were touched by that. And then we cross Tucson Boulevard. One of the CSOs for TPD was doing traffic. That was great. And then we're walking south along the sidewalk. And there's a lot of people walking. And then it was so glorious. The city of Tucson weeds.
In the median. In the common area.
Right. In the area between the sidewalk and the curb.
Uh-huh.
At your Tucson International Airport.
So it's right. So amazing.
Entrance to the city.
Welcome
right?
to Tucson.
Come to Tucson. Here's a beautiful sign. Here's where we're coming.
The chamber. Remember the chamber guys with the Underwood guys? They redid the medians between the airport and Valencia. Remember that? They did that. And that looks okay. The Underwood crew has done an okay job with it. Okay. But no one's doing the side of the roads. So the middle median still looks nice, but there are mesquite tree weeds that are growing out of that area. So it actually blocks the sidewalk.
Yes.
So people were actually getting thorns from the mesquite tree weeds. The picture I sent you to tell you I'm here is Joe next to the weeds.
Taller than me.
It's
higher
than
the elephant's eye.
The offensive lineman, yes.
There was bark on this thing. I counted a tree ring. I was doing a tree ring research on this thing. That's how long it's been there, Ed.
The evolutionary biology department at the U of A was out there with Higdog.
Come on.
So we got that
pride,
going
man. Come on.
Come on,
man.
So I'm telling you,
come on, man.
What
come
the
on,
hell? I mean, it was so perfect because it reminds me.
Because I did one with you about 7 years ago.
Yeah, Rocco's.
And it was on Broadway by Rocco's. And I'm standing with my hand all the way in the air holding a top of this tree weed in the middle of the median saying, come on, man, cut this thing.
We sat at the table with BBG when he was running for city council at the one in front of Chaffin's.
Yes.
It was the same thing. The weeds were so high you couldn't get past the sidewalk.
It's like a jungle.
So I want to tell Rahina, Mrs. Inclusive, that if you were someone in a wheelchair, who needed to go down the sidewalk on Tucson Boulevard, you couldn't get through.
Yep.
But let's get to the parking lot, Joe Higgins. I know the officer, the drug czar is calling soon, but this is too important.
Okay,
all right. So we get to this airport parking lot is supposed to be set up for you park there for a couple of days or a few days, and then, you know, onesie twosies leave, right? So what happened was the place was packed.
Yes.
Well, guess what happened? Everyone left at the same time.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So they only had two or three of these pay thing. Remember, instead they should have collected the money first.
Right. Stamp a thing. Here's your $5, your park, right? Or charge us 10. Charge us whatever.
Right.
Right? You know, pay before you go in. Everybody gets out.
It happens all the time at normal places.
Right, right.
Okay. Just have the guy go, $5, $5,
right.
$5. I don't care. Just say $5 cash.
Yep.
Don't even give me screw your credit card. The deplorables have cash. We'll give you cash, okay? So what happens is we're all trying to leave at the same time. And what happens, Joe Higgins?
I counted on my clock because I said, well, my wife calls me, when are you going to be out of home? And I said, let's say 2 hours just to be safe, right?
Right.
I got home 2 hours after the event was over. It took us 1 hour and 30 minutes to get out of the parking lot. We didn't move for about an hour and a half, hour 15. It was ridiculous. And then finally some cops started coming to realize, because people must have been calling or they must have figured out and started directing traffic out. But everybody had to pay the whole time.
It was perfect Tucson Airport perfect. Authority.
What a tremendous experience you could have had, right? The city of Tucson goes, hey, come on in and we'll get you out. Or the airport authority, whoever owns the darn thing.
Right.
And make it smooth. Make it easy. Send us off with a good, you know, good hurrah, right?
So think about it. They had to have at least 1,000 cars in there.
Easy.
At least.
Easy.
Maybe more. Okay. And they probably made themselves $5,000
right.
in revenue for an afternoon of parking.
Yep.
They haven't made $5,000 in an afternoon on that parking lot in 12 years.
Yep.
Right? And they had two or three people working. Now, here's the bet. I love this. This is so Tucson Airport Authority. So, Joe, when you go to any other airport in the world and you have a similar situation where any other parking lot in the world, right, where there's a little gate that keeps you from going out, right? Mm-hmm. And you pay the money, right? You swipe mm-hmm. the card, whatever. What happens to the gate?
It should go up, Chris.
Automatically.
I'm going to go with automatic go up, yes.
This was so amazing. The girl, she was very nice. She took Joe's money, gave it to this other lady to put in the till, right? She has to walk over to the gate and press a button to raise the thing. And I was thinking about like in old movies, they would have to, the guard would actually have to physically right. lift the gate.
Right.
I thought she was going to do that, but she had to actually waste more time by walking back to the gate, pressing the button, and then you could go through. I mean, it was a joke.
It was a joke.
It was so Tucson. It was so Tucson. That's so Tucson. Walking through the weeds, yeah. people getting scraped up by the trees that were once weeds that are now giant trees growing out. Thank you, Tucson. And we did not move.
Yeah, hour 15 minutes.
I went to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I walked out of the car, went to the bathroom, came back 15 minutes later. Joe's car didn't move.
It's a shame, Chris, because it's such an opportunity. It's like my Dia de los Muertos event.
Oh,
it's like all these
then?
Little opportunities where you can do the right thing or you can make it like bureaucratic mess so you don't want to do it again. It's like I quit going downtown for what, 6 months?
All right, let's keep this going before we go to break. You and me, we rarely fly out of Tucson Airport Authority.
Right.
Okay. So you had a trip you had to take and you made the mistake of flying out of Tucson Airport.
Middle of summer.
So you go to this parking lot.
So I get out of the airplane, get my luggage. I'm wheeling it over. It says, pick up the phone and call the shuttle because he's not making the circulation because of COVID, Chris.
Right.
This COVID thing is like the biggest excuse to not serve people on earth. Hotel rooms aren't cleaning your room. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't put on clothes and try in a retail store because of COVID. It's like this little virus is sneaking all over the place. So I call the number. Ring, 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 ring. No, nobody answers. Ring, 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 ring. Nobody answers. So finally, I'm like, it's been a half hour. And it's 110. Right. So I get my little luggage thing and I start wheeling it across. Of course, there's no sidewalk because you're supposed to go up back into the airport all the way around to get to the thing.
Right.
Chris, what's the shortest distance between two points?
Straight line.
Amen, brother. So I'm in straight lining it through the desert to get back to my car. I get to the car, give the girl like, what's up? Which is, well, the phone rings in the other booth. I'm like, well, then why are you in this booth? Well, we're doing construction on that booth.
So we didn't have a...
I said, give me the number to your manager.
Oh, look at you.
Get the manager on the phone. I said, look.
Karen Higgins.
It's 100. It's 110.
Give me your manager.
I'm calling. And the guy's like, well, you know, we don't run because there's COVID. We're not... I said, you got a guy sitting in a van with an air conditioning waiting for the phone call. You got a girl that can't answer the phone. I said, look, I'm not a manager. I'm not a big manager of a parking lot. But you have one job. And your one job is to make sure that I go from A to B in a shuttle car because there's five other parking spots that I can go to.
So this was in Joe's brain.
Oh.
As we're doing that. All right, we got to go. 7:47 in the morning. We were just talking about Genius. Cheap drugs with Ed Alexander and the sergeant from Tucson Police Department. And on cue, the U.S. drug czar, Jim Carroll's on the phone.
I'm in trouble now.
Ed. Sorry, Ed. We let that out.
Wake up, Tucson. 10:30 The Voice. Ed, hide the stash. Again, welcome back to Wake Up. This is part of the playlist.
As he gets off the airplane, this song's playing.
This is the Donald Trump rally playlist from yesterday.
Too funny.
The walk-off song is YMCA. We'll get to that later.
Yes.
All right, we got to go right to the phones. We have a U.S. drug czar.
Mm-hmm.
He has a better title than that, but it's James Carroll. James, welcome back to the show, sir.
He's in his car and sometime cutting.
Oh, there we go.
There he is.
Director Carroll, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be on, and it's great to be here.
Are you on one of those burner phones you take from the drug guys? I mean, you sound horrible.
Hey, I'm not going to tell you. I can't go.
He's in a brand new Escalade, too, this time.
Oh, man. It's like every other word.
Oh, my gosh. Please call back if you can. Just hang up and and try it one more time, Director Carroll. So
here's the highlights. Drugs are bad, right? We don't want to do drugs. The big question we wanted to ask was marijuana legalization. What's it doing to other drugs, right? Are we seeing more meth? Are we seeing more heroin? The Chinese and the meth with the pseudoephedrine and all that is happening.
Well, it's amazing when we talk about these super meth labs. Let's go right back to the phone. Director Carroll on his cricket phone. Director,
hey, guys, I thought you hung up on me. How rude!
A 2G phone.
Okay. I can't tell you. I'm not going to tell you about my secret phone, burner phone. But, you know. If you guys are supportive of what we do, I promise next time I'm going to get you your own burner phone.
All right. Look at you. Thank you very much, sir. What a sweetie. Tell us why you're in Arizona today.
So I'm back in Arizona, and it is such an honor to be here with the men and women of law enforcement. And really, it's to understand what's been happening during COVID, to see the changes here in trafficking. But also, you know, we've been talking with local people about the changes in the community. And, you know, you just had that sergeant on who was talking about, you know, the homeless and working with, you know, the disadvantaged in the city. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what the American people need to know about the full width and breadth of the life-saving activities carried out by federal, state, local, and tribal law enforcement every day.
Sure. So so we're on the border, and we've always been this flashpoint for drugs coming through. What is the big drug of choice, or what are we seeing? What are we seizing? What is the big thing we're watching?
Yeah, what we're concerned about these days are really primarily two drugs. Fentanyl continues to rise. That has been a priority of President Trump's to stop the flow of this deadly poison, you know, into our communities. And then methamphetamine has really spiked, you know, in the last few months, and we're seeing it more and more. And what concerns me for you all is the preliminary data also seems to indicate that we're facing that problem here as well in Tucson with a rise in methamphetamine use.
So we're tracking pseudoephedrins, the pharmaceutical grade, which is a factor of fentanyl
the fentanyl.
Fentanyl. Is that coming from other countries, third world countries, maybe China's and that kind of thing?
Yeah, President Trump it used to be coming directly from China to the U.S. President Trump took a very strong stance with China. He always does, and drove the Chinese government and the president of China to a commitment to stop sending drugs here. I went a year ago, led a White House delegation there, and since that time, the fentanyl, you know, it only takes a few grains of salt, down to basically zero. There is essentially no more drugs coming in directly from China, but the drug traffickers haven't stopped. All they've done has shifted, and so they're now sending it through Mexico. We're seeing, you know, continuing to see a great concern here because of the number of Americans that are dying, but the drugs are coming now from China, other parts of the world, into Mexico, and then north. And that's why I'm here and honored to be with law enforcement. I'm, you know, here with the supervisor agent in charge of the entire state of Arizona, Scott Brown, who is just a hero and a true patriot, you know, trying to not only save lives here, but he also, and we talked about this yesterday, and you all understand this, every community in the U.S. has to think of themselves as a border town. And so it doesn't matter if you're in Ohio or Pennsylvania. Sadly, this, you know, is where so many of the drugs are coming in.
Sure.
So, Director Carroll, we have a good relationship with Sherry Oz, the special agent in charge for DEA for Arizona, and she was scaring me to death with these fentanyl super labs in Mexico. So what's going on with cooperation with the Mexican government on shutting down some of these super labs? What's any success there?
Yeah, and guys, until I get you the secret burner phones, I can't tell you the exact number because it is classified. We're in double digits of fentanyl labs in Mexico that we have worked. And again, this is President Trump talking to President AMLO in Mexico saying it ends. We have a law and order president. We have shut down, or Mexico has shut down, we're into two digits of fentanyl labs, you know, but we need, you know, more cooperation from Mexico to shut these down. And, you know, as we've been talking about, we need to make sure we know who and what is coming into our country.
So I'm on a Border Patrol task force, a citizens task force, and they were talking about this fentanyl issue. And it's so toxic that if they find it or see it or it comes across, they have to have hazmat suits because one little gram or one little touch can overdose you and and kill you through your skin.
Yeah, I mean, these men and women of, you know, Border Patrol, the men and women who are at the checkpoints, and of course the investigators, from DHS who oversee these drug cases, HSI, they have to carry with them at all times Narcan, the drug that reverses an overdose. And of course, like you said, when they come across these large stashes of fentanyl, they're wearing hazmat suits, you know, like it's some nuclear spill, because that's how deadly it is. Yes.
Director Carroll, I got one more question. I got 30 seconds for an answer, and I'm going to run out of time. We're about to maybe legalize marijuana in Arizona through 207. When you look at states at Colorado, in less than 30 seconds, what has been the effect of legalizing marijuana in a state like Colorado? What are you seeing?
I'm in a special position because I am statutorily required to oppose legalization of marijuana. So by law, I am opposing federal legalization of it. And what we've seen in Colorado is we still have a black market that has not eliminated it. We have seen use of marijuana rise. And what we have seen is an increase in emergency room visits and car crashes.
And kids.